Welcome to Media Mornings, Derek. It's really great to have you here. The theme of the show today is New Year's Revolutions. So we're looking to sort of talk to you a little bit about what you feel like is in store or what should be in store for the new year and how we get there.
That sounds great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So I guess my first question is pretty general, but I've read some of your work and I've read sort of your concepts around freedom, and I wanted to know sort of what do you conceptualize as freedom?
Well, I think that I hate to be a downer, but I think that freedom is not the right. I think freedom is overrated, and I think that I'm finishing up writing a book on some of the problems with anarchism right now, and a lot of the problems, I think, come from an overemphasis on freedom, and what I'm far more interested in, actually, is responsibility, and responsibility to the land, and responsibility to our non-human neighbors. Because I think that a hyper-emphasis on freedom is actually directly in line with patriarchy, with individual freedom. And I think that, I think I understand why in this culture we have a hyper-emphasis on freedom among those who resist as well, because this culture has a very disturbing relationship with freedom, whereby we are certainly not free, and the culture declares us to be free, but the freedoms we have are primarily freedoms to exploit those who are I mean, one of the smartest things I ever wrote was, I think, was in Endgame, where I talked about how this culture is based on a clearly defined yet often unarticulated hierarchy, and violence done by those on the hierarchy, and violence of those higher on the hierarchy, those lower, is nearly always unnoticed, and when it is noticed, it's fully rationalized. And on the other hand, violence that floats up the hierarchy is almost always is unthinkable. And when it does happen, it's met with shock, horror, and the fetishization of the victims. And we see this the way this plays out all the time, whether it is in us believing that sharks are really scary creatures, but the truth is that the ratio of human attacks on sharks to shark attacks on humans is 20 million to 1. Or we see it played out in gender relationships, certainly constantly, as, you know, rates of sexual assault of men against women are just through the roof. And so my point is that what I'm going to do is, let's talk about, there's a great quote I have, but it's on my computer, which is not on, so I'm going to turn on the computer and find the quote, and we can talk about something else for like a minute.
Sure.
Or we can talk, or you can ask any questions you want about that. I'll say one more thing, which is, you know, my book, Walking on Water, was about it was about how I used to teach when I was at college and also at prison. And in there, I really emphasized freedom, because a lot of my students had never experienced freedom in a classroom, really. And I spent a lot of my time just loving them into becoming the people they were. And they learned so much and so quickly. And one of the things I said near the end of the book, I only devoted a little tiny bit to responsibility, but I taught my students for a semester, and had I taught them for a year, what I said is that the first semester would have been about freedom, and the second semester about responsibility, because one of the things I said was that freedom without responsibility is basically immaturity, and responsibility without freedom is basically slavery. And in this culture, we have this very weird sort of, it sort of teaches us to be a nation of, or a people of immature slaves. You know, we have this weird responsibility with this weird freedom that neither one ends up working very well. I mean, part of what I'm trying to get at is that there's this very strange notion in this culture that we do have freedom, but the freedoms are very circumspect. Circumspect's the wrong word. The freedoms are very circumscribed, maybe. The freedoms are very limited. You have the freedom to consume everything you want. You have the freedom to exploit those beneath you on the hierarchy. But you don't really have, I mean, you don't, for example, have the freedom to live in a world that's not being murdered. And you don't have the freedom to, women don't have the freedom to walk down the street safe. And so I get really, one of the reasons I'm emphasizing this so much, like I said, I'm working on a book on some of the problems of anarchism right now. And anarchism is just time and again is they talk about males, especially male anarchists, especially talk about all the importance of all these freedoms, and it gets really, really, really insane really quickly in that you get things happening like both of the major U.S. anarchist journals in the 90s came out pro-pedophilia because they should have the freedom to have sex with whomever they want, including children. And I'm not making this stuff up. It's just, you get this hyper-emphasis on freedom leads to, and they call this some great break with, you know, I could give you bazillions of quotes on this. Anyway, they call this some great break with the dominant tradition, but there's a great line by this really dreadful anarchist who says, there are those of us who no longer want to ask permission. I was like, well, really? So isn't that exactly what the person who commits genocide does? Isn't that what the empire does?
Where does consent play into that?
Is no longer asking permission? So here's a quote I finally found. Ready?
Ready.
This is by Viktor Frankl. Freedom, however, is not the last word. Freedom is only part of the story and half of the truth. Freedom is but the negative aspect of the whole phenomenon whose positive aspect is responsibleness. In fact, freedom is in danger of degenerating into mere arbitrariness unless it is lived in terms of responsibleness. And I love that. And I also love where the word responsible comes from, which is responsible comes from the root respondere, which means to give in return. And I think about this in terms of our responsibility toward the land. And we have a responsibility. The land gives us life, and we have a responsibility to give back, to help the earth live as the earth helps us, as the earth lets us live, as the earth makes our life. And so I think it's really important. I mean, yeah, you know, don't get me wrong. I'm all in favor of revolution, taking down the capitalist system, and taking down civilization, and that. You know, I guess even saying the word Che is a cliche these days, but, you know, I love that line about Che, that the real revolutionary is motivated by love. And I think that we need to remember that, and I think we need to think about our neighbors, by which I mean, you know, those who give us life. I mean the trees, the salmon. And I think that I think we need to act out of responsibility toward them. And I think that especially those of us with privilege, I'm white, I'm a male, need to, you know, this culture already gives me tons of privilege. I've said this for years, that you know, my job as someone who has this privilege is to undercut its basis.
When you're talking about, then, responsibility, you've often delineated the difference between personal individual responsibility and political or social responsibility. Did you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I think one of the questions, and this, I'm sorry again if I'm just fixating on this one issue too, but that's, you know, I'm almost done with this book, and so basically I'm...
It's on your mind. We get that.
had you talked to me a year ago, I would have been obsessing about, or a year and a half ago, I would have been obsessing about the end of the book Dreams, you know, whatever. and now I've sort of rambled on and forgot. What was your question again?
Talking about personal and social responsibility, or individual responsibility versus political responsibility.
I think one of the things that's really central, and I do think that a lot of anarchists get this part right, is that we do need to break our loyalty with the system. And part of the problem is that there's this great line by Frederick Winslow Taylor, who was the guy who sort of developed the Taylorization of workplaces, where people would be like McDonald's, you know, where one person flips burgers and then another person runs a cash register instead of one person doing everything. It's very specialized. And he has this great line, excuse the sexism. It was, in the past, the man was first. In the future, the system shall be first. And that's really dreadful. You know, we have our loyalty to these institutions and these places and not places is really a long word. We have loyalty to these systems that don't serve us well. We have loyalty to capitalism. We generally, I'm not talking about you and me. We have loyalty to, you know, the governments. And one of the ways I always put this is the space aliens have come down from outer space, and we're systematically deforesting the planet, and we're changing the climate, and putting toxins in every mother's breast milk. We would resist these aliens. We would know what to do, but because those who are doing it, because the institutions, the systems that are doing this, are the ones to which we have pledged allegiance every day as we were children, we get suddenly really stupid. And we can't see, you know, even as global warming is ripping apart, is burning up the planet. You know, even most environmentalists, the best we can hope for, the best the planet can hope for most environmentalists, is that they want to switch over to windmills, which are no solution at all. They still don't have their loyalty moved to the land where they live, and they don't have their loyalty moved to the real living earth. It's like, what do all the so-called solutions to global warming have in common? What they have in common is they take industrial capitalism as a given, and the natural world is that which, never that who, must conform to industrial capitalism. That's literally insane in terms of being out of touch with physical reality. What needs to happen is we need to have our loyalty to the land. We need to have our loyalty to the living earth. And the living earth has to be primary, because without a living earth, you don't have a planet. I mean, you don't have life itself. It's really crazy to have your loyalty to a social system instead of to a living planet. And so I think it's like so many indigenous people have said to me that the first and most important thing we have to do is to decolonize our hearts and minds. And what so many of them have said that means to me is to take our loyalty away from the dominant culture, take our loyalty away from capitalism, take our loyalty away from the United States or Canadian government, and put it toward the real living land. And I think that we need to have loyalty to, the land. We need to have loyalty to our communities. Except our communities starts to get really fuzzy because, you know, I live in Crescent City, California, which is sort of Tea Party central for the north coast of California. And is my loyalty, I'm very clear that, you know, my loyalty is not to Crescent City as a town. My loyalty is to this place, which includes the salmon, the bear, and some of my neighbors, some of my human neighbors, I should say. Anyway, so I think we need to think very hard about to whom we are going to be responsible, and and to whom we are not going to be responsible and to whom we owe responsibility. I think we need to think through all these things very carefully.
Now, Derek,
just think of it ahead, but also feel our way. Anyway, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just thinking, you mentioned climate change, and this kind of the insanity of how people think about solutions comes into relief for me when a couple things that happened up here in Canada. One was that a billionaire from California came up to British Columbia and dumped millions of tons of iron into the ocean to create an algae bloom to get carbon credits, and had convinced a local nation that it would help their salmon, but in fact it had caused viewable from space. And the other story I heard was, just this week, they've busted a vegetable oil, like a biodiesel company, from transporting the same load of biodiesel across the Canadian-U.S. border hundreds of times and collecting carbon credits each time it crossed and then shipping it back over and over 200 times. And it's perfectly legal. And yet this is kind of seems like the epitome of this market solution, like looking within the system to get us out of the problems that it created in the first place.
That's
it's wild.
I don't have a lot more to say except that that's completely crazy.
Well, maybe I could pose it that with another, an alternative to that, which is this Idle No More movement that's going across Canada now and some parts of the states that is led by Indigenous people, but they're not saying that it's about their rights alone. They're saying that everyone needs to develop a relationship and to do this from the grassroots, to start where you are and to build alternatives, not to look at the bigger system or only for attention from the government. And it seems to be really growing and maybe providing an example of what you're talking about.
Well, I think that that's really important. I'm not sure. I think it's really important for us not to ignore the governments because they are drivers of much destruction. And I'm not saying you're saying this, but I think we need to watch out that we don't look only for local solutions. I think, yes, we need to, one of the phrases I've really liked is, dismantle globally and renew locally. We do need to renew locally. We do need to defend the places where we live. But at the same time, there's this overarching system which must be, dismantled. The whole capitalist system needs to go. So we do need to be thinking about how we can protect the places and to, it's the sort of the CSA model, community supported agriculture model, is a really good model to put in as a positive. We need both the positive. I think about the Battle of Chancellorsville or in the American Civil War where Robert E. Lee fought against, the Army of Northern Virginia fought against the Army of the Potomac, and there's a classic military strategy used there which is called hammer and anvil, which is that you leave part of your forces there to defend and then you take the other part of your forces out and you try to smash the enemy army between, use it as a hammer to smash down the anvil. And the point is we need to defend the places we live. At the same time, we also need to be doing proactive work to do everything we can to disrupt and destroy the whole capitalist system. Because it does lead to that sort of insanity that suddenly when you have, and it's not just capitalism, another thing we need to smash is human supremacism. Because when you start to think that humans, not only humans, but also this system is the only thing that matters, suddenly you get these completely insane solutions like dumping the iron into the ocean or, spraying aerosols up in the air or, all sorts of, which I think is actually the direction they're going to go. My prediction on the U.S. governmental response to global warming is they're going to keep denying until the last minute, at which point they're going to say, well, it's so desperate, we need to geoengineer, and that's another way that they can make money. So basically, the only things that are going to be even considered by the capitalist governments are solutions that make lots of money for rich people. And none of those are obviously going to actually help.